Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, DNA that's wired for life. Seeing constellation Orion. And electricity from mini turbines in your veins. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Nature uses DNA like a wire, and it's sort of like two telephone repairmen trying to find a mistake in the line. If they can talk to each other, if these repair proteins can talk to each other across the DNA, then the DNA's just fine. So they don't have to repair that region, and they can go someplace else. If there's a mistake in the DNA, then they can't talk to each other so well, and so then that allows them to hone in on where the mistake is.
That was DNA researcher and chemist Jacqueline Barton of Caltech. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
Walking through doorways might be the cause of at least some of our memory lapses. That's according to research released by the University of Notre Dame on November 21st. University psychologists tested the memory of human subjects and found that entering or exiting through a doorway appeared to disrupt the way subjects stored and accessed their memories. The new research seems to offer scientific proof that what we recall in one room, we're less likely to remember as soon as we enter another.
A new map released in November 2011 is the most detailed yet, showing the arrangement of natural features, or topography, of the moon. The map shows the ups and downs of over 98.2% of the entire lunar surface at a scale of close to 100 meters, or 328 feet. NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, now orbiting the moon, made the new moon map possible. Find it at our website, earthsky.org. Just search for moon map.
An international team of researchers has created an innovative silicone wafer that mimics the microscopic structure of a butterfly's wing, specifically the brilliant blue wings of the mountain swallowtail butterfly. The silicone wafer is water repellent and traps both air and light. The researchers say this new kind of silicone could be used in electro-optical devices, infrared imaging detectors, or chemical sensors. The American Institute of Physics made the announcement about this bio-inspired advancement on November 21st.
Experienced meditators seem to be able to switch off areas of the brain associated with daydreaming and psychiatric disorders. That's according to a new brain imaging study by Yale researchers. The Yale team conducted functional magnetic resonance imaging scans on both experienced and novice meditators as they practiced three different meditation techniques. The researchers add that meditation's ability to help people stay focused on the moment has been associated with increased happiness levels. Their study on meditation was published the week of November 21st in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Science interviews coming up next.
Earth Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. The chemistry of DNA, the library of life, is much richer than anyone has imagined. That's according to Jacqueline Barton of the California Institute of Technology. Dr. Barton received a U.S. National Medal of Science for her discovery that living cells use the double strands of DNA like a wire to send long-range signals. Her research is at the forefront of scientists' understanding of how cells detect and repair defects in DNA from oxidative stress associated with aging and diseases like Alzheimer's and cancer. Jacqueline Barton speaks to us from the studios of NPR station KPCC in Pasadena. Dr. Barton, welcome.
It's nice to be here.
I'd like to have you tell us about some research that you've been recently recognized for by President Obama. You received a National Medal of Science. And this is a research that discovered that DNA acts like a wire in a cell. Tell us what's happening here and what is that wire doing?
Yeah, so first of all, it was an extraordinary honor to be recognized for the work. And I really just represent all the people that work with me, all the graduate students and postdocs who really carry out the work. So it's enormously gratifying to have their work represented in this way. So we think about DNA usually as the library of the cell. It encodes all the information that makes us what we are. But it also turns out that when you look at the chemical structure, the molecular structure of DNA, that DNA, that spiral staircase that we think about in terms of the double helix, the steps of the spiral staircase are really actually stacked one on top of another. And it turns out that the DNA polymer, that double helix, looks a lot like solid-state materials that are quite conductive. And so very soon after Watson and Crick first proposed the structure of DNA, chemists started asking, well, gee, does this structure have the same characteristic of being conductive? But that was a while ago. That was a long time ago, over 50 years ago. And about 20, 30 years ago, it reached the point that now chemists could actually synthesize a little piece of DNA and know exactly what's connected to what and essentially attach little, what we did was we attached little molecular probes on either sides of the DNA double helix to ask whether or not you can shoot an electron from one side of the DNA to the other side of the DNA. And that's sort of how it all started.
What's new about this research?
Okay, so first we just thought about it in terms of this chemical characteristic, okay? And what we found out that actually electrons and holes could move through DNA. So we usually think about DNA, as I said, as the information, the library, because DNA encodes the RNA. RNA is sort of like taking a Xerox copy of what's in the library. And then from the RNA, then you go through the ribosome machine, and you make proteins. And the proteins that are made are encoded by the sequence of base pairs in DNA. But so the nucleus of all of our cells are filled with 3 billion base pairs of information in the DNA. But some of our cells have to become a nose cell and make some proteins get expressed, and others of our cells have to make other proteins get expressed. And all that information's in the library. And so now you have to think about, well, what happens, let's say, when a cell is under stress? And the cell is under stress and it has to activate a response to that stress. Well, what we've been finding is that actually the information has to get coordinated across the library because a lot of proteins have to get made, a lot of things have to happen. And maybe that signaling across the nucleus of the cell, across the DNA-containing genome, some of that may be actually happening by using DNA as a wire. And in particular, what we've focused on so far is, turns out that your library of the cell is a very important library, but it's getting damaged all the time, especially if you don't eat your broccoli. And when the DNA gets damaged, that damage has to get fixed or else that information in the library can't be used anymore. And it turns out that in each of our cells, we have this exquisite repair machinery, little proteins that are constantly sifting through your DNA to find mistakes and fix them. Now, what we found out while we were doing these very basic chemistry experiments on DNA as a wire is that DNA can be a good wire, but it's only a good wire if all the bases are stacked on top of each other, the steps on the spiral staircase. And if the DNA isn't damaged, if those bases aren't damaged. If there is a little mistake in the DNA, then it's not a good wire anymore. Sort of the way to think about it, it's like a stack of copper pennies, and that stack of copper pennies can be conductive. But if one of the pennies are a little bit awry, if it's not stacked so well, then you're not going to be able to get good conductivity. And it's similar in the case of the DNA double helix. So now let's go back to thinking about our DNA getting damaged all the time and how those repair proteins have to find those mistakes in the 3 billion bases of DNA. Well, we sort of think that what happens is that nature uses DNA like a wire, and it's sort of like two telephone repairmen trying to find a mistake in the line. If they can talk to each other, if these repair proteins can talk to each other across the DNA, then the DNA is just fine. So they don't have to repair that region, and they can go someplace else. If there's a mistake in the DNA, then they can't talk to each other so well, and so then that allows them to hone in on where the mistake is. So from starting out over 20 years ago now and in synthesizing little pieces of DNA and seeing if we can shoot an electron up or down it, we've sort of come now to the point of saying nature uses this for long-range signaling and for finding mistakes in DNA.
I mean, I think it's just amazing. I mean, we're talking about 3 billion base pairs, these rungs in the molecule of DNA. Just one little rung here or there can make a big difference.
It can make an enormous difference. That's how people, it turns out that when you have cancer, it's often associated with defects in your repair machinery. It's not so much that you have one mistake, and yeah, one mistake can be incredibly detrimental. But now let's imagine if you have a mistake in one of these repair proteins. That means they're not fixing the damage, and so anytime you get damage, that damage gets amplified and it gets worse and worse and worse. And so, you know, some people have a genetic predisposition to colon cancer. It turns out that genetic predisposition is because they have a defect in their repair machinery, in the proteins that find those mistakes. And so it's incredibly important that we're always finding those mistakes in DNA and fixing them. And we're learning that the way to find those mistakes in the DNA is shooting electrons through the DNA helix.
You've been listening to Jacqueline Barton, a professor of chemistry at the California Institute of Technology. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We invite you to join our community for science. Please find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now to talk about the global night sky and an easy and beautiful constellation beginning around now that anybody can see. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Jorge. This is the constellation Orion, and many people say it's their favorite constellation, and the reason people like it so much is that it really is so distinctive. If you go outside in mid to late November and look late at night, and you pick out any pattern in the sky, it'll probably be the constellation Orion. It's just coming up late at night at this time of year. What's happening, though, is that Earth is moving in orbit around the sun, and as we do, the constellation Orion is rising earlier every night. So right around now is the best time to begin to see this constellation in the evening. Around December and January, Orion will already be up in the sky when night falls. And if you look around, you'll just be able to see this very distinctive constellation Orion.
And for people listening who may not be familiar with Orion, what does it look like?
First thing you'll notice is that Orion has what's called a belt. The belt of Orion is a very famous pattern of stars, and they're very noticeable because they're not super bright stars. They're medium brightness, but there are three of them, and they make a short, straight row in the sky. So that's Orion's belt, the short, straight row of three medium bright stars. And you'll see those in the eastern sky in the evening, either late evening in November or early evening in December, or by January, they're up in the southeast, south, you know, as the months go on, they shift across the sky in the evening. But on either side of Orion's belt, you'll see two very bright stars. And one is the reddish star Betelgeuse. Another is the very bright blue-white star Rigel. So a short straight row of three medium bright stars with a very bright star, one red, one blue, on either side, and that is the constellation Orion.
I think Orion is a great constellation, maybe to take somebody who is not familiar with the night sky. It's just a great one to find. It's so beautiful, and it's easy to find.
Absolutely, and it's got a really great legend, too.
What's the story?
Well, it turns out that Orion was a mighty hunter, and he boasted that he could kill any animal on Earth. And so the gods didn't like that. The gods never liked it when anybody boasted. And so they sent a scorpion to kill Orion. And the scorpion stung Orion, and he died. And the gods just were so pleased with themselves that they placed both Orion and the scorpion in the sky, but on opposite sides of the sky so that they're never in the sky at the same time. So for us in the Northern Hemisphere, the scorpion is the constellation Scorpius, and we see that as a summer constellation. The Southern Hemisphere sees it as a winter constellation. But we see Orion as a winter constellation. They see Orion as a summer constellation. It's opposite. No matter what part of Earth you're on, you never see Scorpius and Orion in the sky at the same time.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Earth Sky heard on 1,200 stations around the world, including Voice of America. It's Weird Science Time this week with Ryan Britton. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
So tell us about this story on generating electricity inside a person's body.
Right. So it's fairly well known that we human beings have a bit of electricity running through us. Our bodies, they generate enough electricity to light up a light bulb or two. But today, I have a weird medical science story about teeny tiny little turbines that can be inserted into the bloodstream or the blood vessels of a human to generate electricity. These small turbines would basically spin off of blood pressure and generate electricity. The idea here is to power medical devices such as pacemakers. A group of scientists at Bern University of Applied Sciences in Switzerland, they managed 800 microwatts of power from one turbine, planted in a human blood vessel.
Oh, it's kind of like a mini hydroelectric generator.
Exactly, yeah. But there's a big catch at this stage. The major drawback is that eddies and turbulence within the bloodstream, they tend to coagulate the blood. The stirring causes blood clots that can cause strokes, heart attacks, and other tissue death. So it's sort of a big barrier to overcome, but what these scientists have proved is that the concept works. Our blood pressure can generate electricity using little turbines.
So where can people find out more about these tiny inner turbines?
These blood vessel turbines, yeah, there are articles at popsci.com and gizmodo.com.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Earth Sky is Ryan Britton, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, The Black and White Years, 100 Flowers, Mother Falcon, Sleep Good, and Akote Soul Sounds. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt you. What you don't know won't end it there.